The Warrior Soul podcast is written, produced, and edited by me, Chris Albert. Our mission is to provide tools, tactics, strategies, and ideas to U.S. military veterans and anybody else willing to listen to help them to navigate toward living their absolute best lives. If you find these episodes helpful, please share them out with somebody that you know of that can use them. And if you really like the podcast, please also head over to iTunes and write us a written rating and a review. It really helps us to spread word about the show, and it really helps to get these tools in the hands of others who really need them. This podcast is sponsored by F-Bomb Nutrition. They make awesome, delicious packets of macadamia nut butters. They mix them up with chocolate, with sea salt, with pecan butter. They're absolutely delicious, and they also have a number of other fat-fueled snacks, like their meat sticks and their cheese crisps. They're amazing people who are sending boxes of this stuff out to the troops on the front lines, and they're offering 20% off to our listeners on their first orders. If you head over to www.dropanfbomb.com and use the code WarriorSoul at checkout, you'll get 20% off of that first order. And I'm going to keep the announcements short and sweet today. If you can, stick around to the end. I got a really special announcement about a brotherhood that we're creating here at Warrior Soul. So I hope you enjoy this episode. I hope you get a lot out of it. And without delay, let's get into it.
This is Chris Albert, and I'm here to remind you of one thing. Someday, you're going to die. Now, that's not some morbid statement or scary idea. It's solid fact. Your time here on this earth is limited. And you need to be reminded of this as much as possible for one simple reason. To live your best life while you can. This is the Warrior Soul Podcast.
All right, ladies and gents, I've got an outstanding guest for you today. We have Mr. Rob Jones on the Warrior Soul Podcast. Rob is a United States Marine Corps veteran. He is also an ultra endurance athlete. He has ridden a bike from Maine to California in the dead of winter across country. He's also completed 31 marathons in 31 days. And at this point, I should also mention that he is actually a double above the knee amputee. He lost both of his legs while serving in Afghanistan as a United States Marine. In addition to that, Rob is a bronze medalist for the United States Paralympic team. And now Rob is looking to continue his service to this country by pursuing a congressional seat. He is running for Virginia's 10th congressional seat, and currently he's campaigning for the primary. So I wanted to give Rob a chance to come on, speak to all of you, speak about why he's running and what he sees as what he wants to fix in this country. And we had a great conversation. You guys are going to get a lot out of this because it's not just about his campaign. It's about him as a person, how he's survived all of the obstacles that have been put in front of him. And not just survived, but really thrived. This guy's done some amazing stuff, and it looks like he's going to continue to do some amazing things. So huge inspiration for all of us. Let's get into this conversation now. Rob Jones, welcome to the show, man.
Hey, thanks for inviting me back. It's an honor to be a two-time guest on the podcast.
Dude, it's great having you, man. I was saying, number one, I know that anybody who listens to my show probably already knows who you are, but can we get the quick synopsis of your epic life? Because you've done a lot of stuff, man.
It's kind of difficult to make it too quick. I'll see what I can do. Joined the Marine Corps in 2006 during my junior year at Virginia Tech, combat engineer. My job was IED detection using a metal detector and route clearance, so just finding safe routes through areas that we thought would have a high likelihood of containing IEDs. So if you imagine going across a bridge, There's only one way that you can go across a river. So the Taliban likes to put, IEDs on either side of the bridge. So we would kind of predict that they're going to put them there. So I would go out in front of everybody else and make sure that route was clear. I did two deployments, one to Iraq in 2008 and one to Afghanistan in 2010. It was in Afghanistan that I was wounded while doing my route clearance mission. And I became a double above knee amputee. I spent a year and a half at Walter Reed and relearning how to walk and do all the stuff that I wanted to be able to do. Retired from the Marine Corps in December of 2011. Took up sports, and my first sporting endeavor was going to the Paralympics 2012 for rowing. Won a bronze medal there. And from there, I kind of turned my sights on continuing to serve my country and my fellow veterans. And what I did was establish Rob Jones Journey. And it was a fundraising endeavor, fundraising and awareness raising. Funds went to wounded veteran charities that I had had interaction with over the course of my recovery and since then. And the awareness raising was about, it was just to create a story about a veteran that was wounded, experienced trauma at war, and came back home and thrived from that trauma, thrived from his injury, instead of being destroyed by it. Because we didn't really see a whole lot of that. We still don't see a whole lot of that in the media. And I want to just make sure that people have both sides of that story, of the story of trauma at war. The story where people come back and they do struggle because it's a true story, but also the one where people come back and they're fine because that one doesn't get heard enough and it's actually a lot more common than the other story. So I followed that bike ride up. I didn't even say it. The bike ride was my first mission on Rob Jones' journey. And that was, I rode my bicycle from Maine to Camp Pendleton in the winter of 2013 to 2014. That took 181 days, and it was 5,181 miles, and we raised $125,000 for charities on that ride. And then I followed that up in 2017 with the month of marathons, which was I ran a marathon every single day for 31 days straight, starting in London on October 12th of 2017, and kind of doing a tour around the United States in 31 different cities and finishing November 11th of 2017 in Washington, D.C. On the National Mall. And with that, we raised $225,000.
That's absolutely amazing. I mean, you've done more than most people do with all their appendages and everything. And it's a testament to you. But you know, one of the things I'm always talking about on here is that, you know, we're in this time and place where people seem to be really angry, really mad, really divisive all the time. And one of the things I'm telling this community constantly is if you are mad about something, if you want to change something, then you've got to put yourself into position to do that. Mm-hmm. And what you've done is you've taken what you have and you've really created something extraordinary, and that's amazing. That's a path that I think every one of us needs to try to follow.
Thank you. Yeah, that's, I would say the same exact thing. You know, if you want to make a difference in the world towards something that if you want something to be different in the world, then you have to be the one to take the responsibility and step forward and do it. I thought that the concept that I've, you know, created from my life is what I call proof the lane. And that is, you know, when I was in Afghanistan, when I was doing IED detection, every time I took a step further into a minefield, I was doing what's called proofing the lane. I was stepping on a piece of ground and proving whether or not there was an IED there by seeing if it exploded. And so you kind of take that and apply it to life. There's plenty of opportunities every single day in Afghanistan where somebody has to be the one to step forward and do the dangerous thing or the difficult thing on behalf of everybody. And, you know, life is no different. Everybody has people in their lives that they care about, places in their lives that they care about. And somebody has to be the one to step forward and do the right thing on behalf of those groups or those places. So I think everybody should take that responsibility.
Now you're taking that responsibility a step further now. And you are currently
running for Congress, right?
Correct. I'm running for the House of Representatives, U.S. Congress in the state of Virginia, where I grew up in Virginia's 10th district, which is kind of most of Northern Virginia.
Right. That's right. Right outside of Washington, D.C., for those who've never been in the geographic area. Like, D.C. is kind of weird because you're literally like in Maryland, then you're in D.C., and then all of a sudden you're in Virginia, right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. So, yeah, Washington, D.C. was created by, you know, Maryland and Virginia both giving up a little bit of land in between each other. And so you can go between each, you know, pretty quickly. Oh, well, there's no traffic, of course.
There's a ton of traffic.
So.
Ton of traffic, ton of heat. You can't do much about the heat, but we'll talk about the traffic a little bit later. So what made you decide to do this? Because I've worked for congressional representatives before. I know that it's a process, man. I know that it's not easy. It's not as simple as saying, hey, I'm going to go run for Congress and everything's going to be all right. What made you make this decision?
Yeah, you know, I started thinking about it in after the 2016 election, and there were a lot of people that were saying, you know, about the election, you know, is this the best people that we have to represent us? And it kind of reminded me of that proof of the laying concept where if we wanted, you know, I just felt like I had a responsibility to step, you know, put myself out there and offer myself up as a representative. And it's really just about restoring optimism to the area, to America, to the people here. I grew up here since I was 1 year old, and I kind of went away and did the Marine Corps stuff and did all these things. And now I've returned home and I built the house in Middleburg, Virginia. And I just noticed that there's not that feeling of optimism that we had when I was a kid. That I don't get that same feeling in this area anymore, and really just over, you know, throughout the country. And so what I want to do is help to restore that optimism to the area. Like I have, you know, I'm kind of lucky. I have natural optimism. I think I was born with it. And then by being in the Marine Corps, I've just become more and more optimistic about things. And I can kind of see where a situation can possibly play to my advantage, or I can find the good in a situation. And so all these issues that we keep hearing about, I think are just really beating people down, and they're not feeling particularly great about their lives. And if you don't feel like you can have a good life, then there's really no reason to strive towards anything. And so I want to help restore that optimism to the area, so that people can really start to believe in a bright future again, and they'll start to push themselves.
Right. So like optimism as in a belief in America, a belief that this is a land of opportunity. And if you apply yourself, you can really make anything out of yourself if you want to, if you work hard enough, if you're dedicated enough, if you are somebody who wants to do something, you can do it. And I had Nick Koumalatos on last week, and we were talking about his Greek heritage and how his family had come here from Greece, and how the Greek community in general, I mean, you see these guys, they came, they would live in houses together. They'd create restaurants. They'd work dishwashing, everything like that. And, you know, 20, 30 years later, they're citizens. They've built amazing businesses and things like that. And these are opportunities that are available to all of us. And I think you're right. We're seeing less and less of that, you know, mentality where you can make a dream happen.
Yeah. I mean, belief in America and the possibilities that we have here, but yeah, belief in yourself that if you apply the work, and it's going to be possible for you to reach your goals. And then also just, you know, relieving yourself from things that you think are going to be set up. I mean, in terms of specific issues, so I would like the daily life of a person to be, you know, they wake up in the morning and they feel like they're going to go to work and they're going to put in a great day of work. They're going to do their best and they're going to see positive results from that. And they're going to get to work in a short amount of time because there's not going to be a lot of traffic. And they're just going to get in their car and they're going to go to work. They can spend time in the morning with their kids because they don't have to spend 90 minutes in the car. They can see their kids off to school and go to work. And then they're going to put in that hard day's work. They're going to come home feeling good about themselves. And then they're going to come home and they're going to see their kids or see their wife or husband or whatever. And if they have kids, they're going to feel positive that their kids got a great education that day and their kids are going to have a great future because they're getting such a great education and all these possibilities are open and available to them. And they're not going to worry too much about whether or not they're going to be able to afford their healthcare because healthcare in America is inexpensive and it's high quality and it's accessible. So they're not going to worry, but that's not going to be a burden on their mind. And then they're not going to be worried about, you know, a variety of things. They're going to be just be positive. They're not going to be worried that when they drop their kid off at school, that they're in danger at school. And then you can just kind of tie that back into a lot of these different, you know, take the opioid epidemic, for example. You know, what makes people, you know, feel like they need to take something in order to escape from their life is because they don't really feel optimism for their future. And so that's what I want. I want people to feel that hope or that optimistic feeling for the future in their lives and their kids' lives in general.
Tell me about the field you're jumping into. So right now you're in the midst of trying to campaign for the primary, right?
Yeah, correct. So in Northern Virginia, Virginia's 10th district, they've decided that they're going to do what's called a convention in order to determine who the – I'm running as a Republican. So in order to determine who the Republican nominee is going to be. And so there's – I think there's four people, including myself – that have all put their hat into the ring. And I haven't met all of them, but the ones that I've met, they seem like good people. And I'm happy to have as many people as possible or as want to be in the race there, because I think the more choice the voters have in this area, the more likely it is they're going to find somebody that, you know, perfectly fits their viewpoints and they feel like it, you know, will represent them well. So the more people, the better for the voters. And at the same time, the more people that are in this race, the harder it's going to be for me. And the harder it is for me, the more I'm going to have to push myself and the better that I'll be. So, you know, the more people, the merrier as far as I'm concerned.
Right. And tell me about the district. How long has the district been controlled by the opposite party? Because you're going to be running against an incumbent after the primary, right?
Yes, exactly. So the district here, you know, it's a what we call a purple district. It's pretty central in terms of the way people vote. They vote both Democrat and Republican. And it was actually, you know, in this seat, it had been held by Republicans for a very long time, 30 some years. So and then it was just this past election in 2018 where a Democrat won. And so, yeah, it's only been in, you know, kind of a Democrat representative just since, you know, since this last election.
And I've heard that running for Congress is kind of like going for a PhD in multiple different disciplines at the same time. I'm sure there's a lot of learning you've got to do. You got to learn not just about, you know, the district itself, but also foreign policy, also Congress's role as far as being in the rest of the government. Things like constituent services, I mean, understanding what issues the constituents face and things like that. How are you handling that on a daily basis?
Yeah, it's a PhD in a lot of things, especially relationship building and communications. So it is, it's a challenge to figure out how to communicate. Well, there's 800,000 people in this district. It's a challenge to figure out how to communicate with that many people. And so what we do is right now I'm just going to events, all the events I can manage to get to, I go to them and I just talk to people and I'm calling people and we, you know, there's an election, a local election here in November 5th of this year. and I've been going out and knocking on doors with some of the local candidates, so, and just listening to them. But so I think General Mattis, in his book, he has a quote from George Washington in it. And in the quote is, first you listen, then you help. First you listen, then you help. Then you do something else, then you lead, I think. But I'm at the listening stage right now. And then I'm going to figure out how I can help. And then we'll go from there.
That's awesome. And so there's this other aspect. I mean, you're obviously quite familiar with social media. Rob Jones' journey has garnered a huge following. That's probably helped quite a bit. But now you're also in the stage where you've got to get on with the traditional media. And unlike podcasts like this, where we get to talk, we get to have a conversation, a lot of times it's like, get your points out in 15 seconds before the commercial break. Yeah. Have you done a lot of training as far as that goes?
I've done some training, yeah. So I have a lot of experience on all forms of media. So one thing that scares me right now is that historically, I've been the guy that everybody's rooting for. So no matter what station I went on or what reporter I talked to, they're rooting for me because I'm fighting against the odds and I'm doing this for veterans who everybody love. And now I'm kind of, you know, I'm going to be a guy where a lot of people don't want me to be successful. And so they might try and ask me, you know, a gotcha question that it'll be hard for me to answer. And so I'm kind of having to adapt to that. And it's just through experience. You know, I sit down with my campaign advisors and they ask me these tough questions that that they expect I might hear. And it's just getting repetitions in. And so far, all the media that I've done it's mostly been biographical and they just want to kind of get to know who I am so the voters can kind of find out a little bit about me. But yeah, it's just practice, practice, practice.
Yeah. And, you know, I think just like anything in life, I mean, there's going to be times when maybe you don't perform at your best, but you use it as a learning experience and you just get right back up and get after it again, right?
Exactly right. I mean, you learn every time you do anything if you pay attention closely enough. The sad thing is, in this particular sphere, if you do mess up, then people won't let you forget it. Yeah. So you have to be very careful, and it's difficult to be, you know, perfect all the time. And so that's why, you know, nobody's perfect, and so it's one of those things that it's nerve-wracking.
Have you reached out to any other active members of Congress who might have had pieces of advice for you, who might have given you a little bit of knowledge as far as the route you're taking?
Yeah, so part of the reason that I thought that I might be able to run for Congress and win is because my buddy Brian Mast from Florida, after he won his 2018 reelection, we had met in 2011 when we were at the hospital together. And he's a double above knee amputee as well. And he brought me into his office, or I sent him a text and I said, congratulations. And he sent me a text saying, we'd love to have you in Washington. And I said, you know what, I've been thinking about that. I've been, you know, pondering whether or not I should try and do that. And he brought me into his office and he kind of gave me a rundown of how he got there and kind of what his daily life is like and what he did to get elected and that kind of thing. And kind of made it clear that it might be possible for me to do a similar thing and to get elected and represent people here. And so that's kind of when I decided that I was going to go for it.
A major part of your platform is getting people to work together from opposite parties. Number one, you know, if you get elected, how are you going to start reaching out to the other side to say, hey, listen, guys, we've been battling it out. We've been going after each other. Let's start figuring out some compromise here on some of these issues. What's your strategy for that?
Yeah. So part of my platform is the fact that I think the idea of a republic is to it's not to have 51% of the people cram down the throats of the 49% of the people, you know, what they want. It's not the majority ruling over the minority. It's finding a solution that the vast, vast majority of people, 75, 80% of people can say, you know, go to bed at night saying, I'm happy with this solution. It may not be, I may not have gotten everything that I wanted in a perfect world, but what we have here is something that I can be happy with. And so part of that and part of being able to help people work together and work with people is figuring out where you can bond over things. And one of the big advantages I have is I'm a veteran, and there are a lot of different other veterans in Congress that are on both sides of the aisle. And so when I go to talk to another veteran, we're going to have something that we can bond over that is, you know, that supersedes political party or any particular issue. We're both veterans. And so we can have respect for each other. We can have that mutual respect, and we can bond over that, and we can have a conversation that way. And then we can kind of go out from there. But even if it's not with another veteran, you know, I can find issues that have an effect on my constituents and then other people's constituents. So we were talking about traffic. So I can go to folks in Maryland and maybe even West Virginia and say, let's work together to figure out this traffic situation on the Beltway and in all of our states. And we can work together on that. And then we form a bond over that. And then we can kind of, you know, people will see that and we can just build that relationship, build that mutual respect, and then go from there.
It's interesting because if you ever read, there was a political scientist, a French political scientist. He was the first one to write about the United States. This is back, I think, in the early 19th century. His name was Alexis de Tocqueville. Mm-hmm. He talks about something called the tyranny of the majority, which is exactly what you're speaking of. It seems like whenever we have a lot type majority, it's literally shoving stuff down the throats of the opposite party. Yeah. And we see a lot of that going on right now in Congress with the way things are. And I think a lot of people are angry about it.
Yeah, I mean, we shouldn't have tyranny of any kind. Right. that's the whole purpose of our republic, of this country, is to do away with tyranny. And so, yeah, I think people are getting frustrated that it seems to be, you know, the very small, just the barely majority is trying to rule over the minority. And, you know, we shouldn't be about that. We should be about finding compromises. Our country was based on something called the Great Compromise, and it was something that both sides of the discussion could be happy with. It wasn't what the exact thing that they wanted, but it was something that they said, you know what, this will work for the vast majority of people, and that's what we want to do. We want to improve people's lives, as many people's lives as we can. And that doesn't mean like winning the partisan football game that people want to be in, where you want your team to win, to score all the points, and you don't want the other team to score any points. I mean, that's not what a republic is about.
Right. Exactly. Now we've got a lot of wedge issues. And when I say wedge issue, it's an issue where both sides are at loggerheads. Right. And it seems to me there's been a lot of work over the last few years to make things that shouldn't be wedge issues into wedge issues. And one of those is something that you've got personal experience with, and those are school shootings. I know you went to Virginia Tech. You're on campus when the Virginia Tech shooting happened. And it seems to me like there's very little compromise being made as far as things that can actually protect people. All right. It's either we ban all guns, or, you know, we do something else, right? Yeah. And obviously, this is a veteran oriented podcast. We're very pro Second Amendment here. What's your take on these issues?
It's tough. I mean, that's why part of the reason why we don't have a lot of movement is the partisanship. But the other part of it is that it is a really difficult thing to figure out, because we have these kind of two, we have kind of opposite, opposing forces where we want liberty, but we also want safety.
Right.
And so figuring out where that balance is with, and, you know, maintaining respect for the Constitution and due process and, you know, all these rights that we have in the Constitution, it's not going to be an easy thing to figure out. So we have to figure out how we can not punish law-abiding citizens, mm-hmm. Because of the actions of a few people, but also live up to the responsibility of the government to provide for the common defense of its citizens, provide that safety. And yeah, I mean, it's going to be one of those tough issues where you have to really think about it long and hard, and yeah, come up with something. But yeah, it's really really difficult to figure out.
You think there's a lot of political grandstanding that's going on around this issue? Because I mean, I look at what's going on out there. You've got certain people, and I'm not gonna start bashing people or anything like that, but people saying, hell yes, we're gonna take your AR-15. Things like that seem like they're made to incite a certain population here in the United States. And you know, it bothers me. It bothers me a lot, because not just as a gun owner, but as somebody who I mean, I come from New England, which is classically a very liberal area. And unlike a lot of other New Englanders, I've traveled around this country. I've met the salt to the earth people. I've met the people who put their kids on the line to serve this country. I've met so many different Americans who I think they've been labeled deplorable. They've been labeled all these different things, but they're really what drives this country. And there's been a concerted effort, I think, to characterize that population in this country as somebody who's intolerant, as somebody who's racist, as somebody who's all these different things. You know, do you think that's going to stop?
I think what it boils down to is returning to civility and returning to a point where we are recognizing each other as human beings, right, as fellow Americans. And yeah, I mean, and that's what it is. So we have to recognize that I might not agree with you, or I might not agree with another person, or that person might not agree with that person on one or two things, but we recognize that they're a human being, and we all kind of want the same thing. We want a great life. We want an enjoyable life, and we want a life with meaning, and we want to help people, and we want to support our families. And we all have that stuff. We all want those things. And so we have to make sure we're remembering that about other people, even, you know, people that we don't know, before we go and attack them and accuse them of, you know, atrocious things like being a racist, before we get to know them. So we need to fall back on those things that we bond on, that we have, and then, you know, get to know a person before we criticize.
As you're approaching this, you know, obviously it's a difficult feat. Number one, what's your daily schedule like? Like how long are you working every day? And I'm sure you're working constantly.
Yeah.
I know you run a farm, and that's gotta be a lot of work in and of itself as well. So yeah. So how are you fitting all this in?
Well, the farm is mostly my wife's operation. She runs a vegetable operation on our property. We have 13 acres here, and she has chickens. And but yeah, the property and the house, it's a lot of maintenance that I help her out with big projects for the farming operation. And we have a lot of grass that we need to mow, and a lot of firewood we need to chop up, and a lot of maintenance on the house and the grounds that we have to keep up with.
But listen, podcasts.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, that's a great time to listen to learn for me about all these issues that you mentioned that I need to know about, that are all very complicated. And so usually between 7 and 9, on either writing or reading about these issues that I'm trying to get spun up on. And sometimes I'm in a meeting, if there's an early meeting. And then usually between 9 and 11, I'm making phone calls to people, finding out what they find to be important to them, what they want me to be focusing on, and then also trying to gain fundraising donations, because that is a big aspect of running a campaign, is getting donations and being able to spend money on getting your name out there and helping people to know who you are as a person so they can decide if they want to vote for you. So that's 9 to 11. And then 11, I usually take a little break. I do a workout, running, lifting weights, whatever it may be. And then I'll have breakfast at noon. And then I'll get back to the phones between 1 and 3 or 1 and 4, doing more fundraising calls, getting to know about the issues that people care about. And then usually after 4, I'll get to the stuff around here, you know, the personal stuff where I'm doing maintenance around the house and that kind of thing, spending time with my wife. And then throughout the day, you know, throughout the week, I may have meetings or something. So if I have a meeting, I usually, you know, I set it up and then I'll just go to that meeting, and that'll just take precedence over whatever I'm doing at that point.
And you got a child on the way, right?
Yeah, we got a baby coming in February. So we're really excited about that. And then, so that's going to take, you know, a lot of time to make sure I'm being a responsible father and finding that work-life balance.
Most important job in the world right there. That's
yeah, exactly. You know, I think about the race, and I think about, you know, if for whatever reason things don't go my way, I'm going to be returning to an awesome life. I have a great wife. I have a great house. I have a great piece of property. I have a son coming. And so I'm going to be returning to a great life. And so if I don't win for whatever reason, then, you know, I return to this great life and I'm just going to move on with it. And so I fall back on that when things start to get overwhelming and that kind of thing.
You've faced an enormous amount of adversity in your life, and you've maintained an extremely positive mindset. And I've seen that with a lot of people, and every time I've seen it, there's something behind them that's driving that faith. Where do you get that from? How did you learn that? Is it from religion? Is it from just learning, from life experience? Where does that come from?
I think life experience for the most part. I think my time in the Marine Corps taught me all about mission accomplishment, being the most important aspect of who you are. And the fact that just because your original plan for your mission doesn't pan out, doesn't mean that the mission ends. And so I had to think about what my mission in life was. And I'm not talking about specific, like go to the Paralympics or do this or that. I'm talking about break it down to its most base level. What is your mission in life? And it is to live a meaningful life and live an enjoyable life. And so being in the Marine Corps was one, my original plan for doing that. I was going to deploy and I was going to maybe join MARSOC, and that's how I was going to do it. And then I stepped on an IED, and that plan was pretty much no longer available to me. So I had to find a new plan. And it took me a while to figure out what that plan was going to be. I did the Paralympics and the bike ride and the month of marathons. And by the time I finished the month of marathons, I was like, this is the plan. This is the goal. This is what I need to do in order to get back to that, to get to my mission. Things like the bike ride and the month of marathons and help other people. While doing something that's difficult. And so I think that running for Congress is the next logical extension of that, where I can help even more people with what I'm doing.
When it comes to raising money, I'm sure you're on the phone constantly. I'm sure you're probably traveling to events every single day, trying to get those donor dollars up. How is that going for you? And what, as far as your strategy goes, is it basically just grassroots reaching out to individuals? Are you reaching out to organizations? Are you or is it all of all that encompassed in one?
Well, yeah. So for the federal election rules, you can only take individual contributions.
Okay.
Or political action committee contributions. Mm-hmm. And both of those have limits on them, maximum limits. So I think a political action committee can give you 10,000, and that's it for an election. And the individual one is something like $2,800 per election, but there's two elections per cycle, so $5,600 per person. And we're trying to raise, in this area last year, I think each candidate spent something like $5 million on advertising and signs and literature and community outreach and that kind of thing. So you have to get money from a lot of different people. And so I'm kind of the guy that needs to be doing it because I'm the candidate. It's not like I can have somebody else do it for me. So you hire a fundraiser that does this for a living. And they kind of set you up with, they get lists for you to people to call, and you call those people and you try and build relationships with them, and you get out there and you meet other people at these events that I'm going to, and you talk to them and you build relationships with them. And eventually when they get behind you enough and they believe in you, then they'll contribute, and they'll either donate money or they sign up to be a volunteer, or they sign up to host a meet and greet or a fundraising event. And that's the goal. So it's a really a PhD in relationship building with as many, and communication with as many people as you can talk to.
Are there any things that you've learned in that process as far as tips that you can give out to the audience as far as relationship building? One of the things I've learned from being a podcast host is that, when I'm reaching out to guests, when I'm trying to bring people on the show, it can't just be all about you. It's got to be about the other person. What types of tips have you learned as far as trying to convert people into allies?
Yeah, I've been thinking about this. One of the things that I find to be helpful in accomplishing difficult challenges is reaching milestones along the way. Mm-hmm. So, say you're doing a workout where you want to do 10 sets of 10 of something. So you get to the first one, and then your next milestone is the second set, and then your next milestone. So you kind of keep finding these milestones until you get to the 10th one and you're done. And so, yeah, I've been trying to think about what the milestones are in relationship building and what order they should come in. I don't have an answer for you yet. I'm still learning and trying to figure it out and noticing things. But I think the most important aspect of relationship building is first finding something that you have in common, so finding something to bond over. Establishing trust between the person, establishing something that you agree on and that you can talk about, and then being willing to listen to the other person. And like you say, it's not about you. If you go into it with the attitude that you want to find out about the other person, what they care about, then they'll tell you. And if they do the same thing, then you'll tell them. And it's kind of this mutual exchange. And it's just about being respectful about what they think, and being honest. So, it's a lot of different things, but I think the first thing is you have to do pretty quickly is establish something that you can bond over.
That right there, that I think is going to make you an excellent member of Congress, because you could have gone and you could have made something up. You could have been like, oh, I know this, I got this, but you're honestly there and you're honestly learning about this stuff and you're being very open about that. And that's something I really admire and something I really like. It's something that I think is rare in individuals these days, where everybody's kind of an instant expert on things, right?
Yeah. I'm coming at this. I've never run for political office before. And here I am, you know, if I didn't have good political advisors, I wouldn't be doing it. Cause when I first started, I had no idea what I was doing. And so, yeah, I am learning about politics and about, you know, this whole situation, this whole system. I feel like I'm learning pretty quickly because I have good advisors. I have a great team behind me. And so, and I'm getting the experience on a day-to-day basis. Yeah, so I'm coming at this, and I think that people are going to will recognize that, and they will identify with that, the fact that I'm not a career politician, and I'm just a, you know, I'm a guy that grew up here and has been serving his country since 2006 and just wants to continue to do that and help people because that's what my life is about. It's about helping other people and helping my country and being of service to them.
How did you go about trying to put together that team? Like knowing who to take, who to bring onto your side, who to hire?
Yeah, you know, so Brian Mast, the congressman from Florida I mentioned earlier, he has his campaign consultants that he works with. So he set me up with them because I was thinking about doing it, but I had no idea how to get it done. And so he helped me out. He set me up with these two guys. And they had experience running his campaigns, and one of them had experience on other campaigns before. So they kind of knew what to do and all the people that you need. And so I do a lot of the times, I just kind of defer to their judgment, defer to their experience, and kind of have that, you know, decentralized command type of thing going on where they say, okay, now we need to get a fundraiser. And you look for somebody that has experience, somebody that has a pedigree, and somebody that you feel like you can work with, that you get along with. And so my fundraiser has all three of those things. And so I met with her and we got along great. And so we have her on the team, and then same thing for my campaign manager, experience, pedigree. And we met and we got along great. And I feel like I can work with them well. And so it's kind of those three things. But you have to have trust in the people that are setting you up, these people. And so I trust my campaign consultants because I'm friends with Brian and I know that he wants to help me and I trust his judgment. And so you kind of go from there.
Awesome. And you know, I know you mentioned transportation is going to be a big issue coming up in this election. Yeah. Are there any other big issues that you think are going to drive this particular election? What are the other ones you have on your radar here?
The ones that I'm most passionate about, I think that people care about here the most is, yeah, the traffic. Well, I guess infrastructure in general, really. So part of that is traffic. Right. Part of that is public transportation. So we have the metro here. So we need to get that, you know, finished. They're doing an extension. And then we need to make sure that's streamlined and keep that going. And I have a couple ideas about how we can improve traffic kind of in the short term that I'm excited about, that I'm still researching. But yeah, I'm excited about them. And then we also have to think long term in terms of, you know, road improvements and big infrastructure projects. So you kind of got to think short term, mid term, long term, and all of these things. So then also there's, you know, I forget the number, but the vast majority, something like, I think 75% of the world's internet traffic goes through the data centers that are in Northern Virginia in this district and in nearby districts. And meanwhile, we have people in the western part of our district that have no broadband connections.
Wow.
So getting those people connected to the internet, reliable connectivity to the internet without, you know, if you wanted Comcast, my neighbor here, he's trying to extend Comcast from my house to his house and they want $8,000 for it. Oh. So it's being able to get people connected to the internet reliably without breaking the bank and spending all the money that we have. Cause I don't know about you, but I can't afford $8,000 to go. So figuring out how to do that. But then we also have a very unique district in that it's the eastern part of the district is very urban. It's part of, you know, the DC metropolis. But the western parts of the district are rural and it's all farmland. And we want to preserve that farmland because it's a big part of our, it's a big part of the economy in Virginia and also Northern Virginia. So figuring out how we can preserve farmers and that farmland in our natural areas out here, but also get people connected to, you know, to the internet so that it's a lot of kids that get these, I think when you get to school, you get a laptop, you get like a ThinkPad or something or an iPad or something like that. And they get homework that is based on them being able to go on the internet. But if they go home, they don't have internet. Well, how are they supposed to do their homework? So you have to figure out how to get people connected to the internet. And then that also kind of relays back to traffic. If people can telecommute from home, they don't have to go to work.
Right.
So a lot of these issues kind of combine together. So all of those things are kind of all under the umbrella of infrastructure for me. And so that's kind of going to be number one. You know, and if I can do anything, and if I can only do one thing during my course of my time as a congressman, and I can get people to and from work at a normal time period, right, and get people connected to the internet, then I'd say that job well done. But I'm very passionate about education. I think that an educated populace is the most important thing to the future of your country. So we need to prioritize that. And I'll just give you three. Another one is healthcare for me, because that system is just getting out of control. And I've been a very lucky person in that in my, you know, healthcare life, I've gotten incredible healthcare. And I think everybody should be able to afford the healthcare that they need, regardless of their life circumstances, their, you know, their finances or their health status. We all have to be able to afford to take care of ourselves. And so those are kind of the three big issues, but to me, every issue is important. And right. So I'm going to be open to the opportunities that are presented themselves or that are presenting themselves at certain times. If I have an opportunity to have something to make a difference in terms of, immigration, then I will when that time comes. But you do have to kind of prioritize and execute your goals. And so my number one thing that I'm going to be focusing on will be infrastructure.
Your academic training was it civil engineering or was it, I know you were an engineer.
No, I went to Virginia Tech. I started in computer science, but I sucked at computer science and I wasn't doing well. And then I joined the Marine Corps. Or I changed my major to interdisciplinary studies and joined the Marine Corps. And that's what I ended up with my degree in. I think my two minors were astronomy and geology. It was kind of a degree. I kind of wanted just to have a degree so that I could apply to be an officer in the Marine Corps. But also because I had done 3 years at college and I figured it would be a total waste if I didn't finish.
The reason I say that is you kind of think, it seems like you think like an engineer. You look at different parts and how they combine into a whole and how they work together and things like that. It's just
Well, maybe I should have stuck with computer science. I should have worked harder in the computer science than maybe I'd be a computer scientist. But then at the same time, if I had, then I probably wouldn't have joined the Marine Corps and we wouldn't be talking right now. So no reason to think about what you could have done. But yeah, I think you do have to kind of think about it like that. We have limited time and energy to have an effect on things. I'm sure you listen to Jocko, prioritize and execute. And you just have to, use your time and your energy wisely and right. In a way that's going to get the greatest effect.
Couple more questions here. You know, obviously we're talking to a veteran population here. What in your mind is the biggest issue facing the veteran population? And how would you approach it?
Yeah, that's a tricky one. You know, I think for the veteran and service member population, the biggest issue is making sure we're doing everything we can to ensure that the fights that we send them to are the right fights. Mm-hmm. And that we have the funding to get them the training that they need and get them taken care of when they get home, if they get wounded. So that's kind of number one, you know, kind of a prevention mechanism. And then making sure that the right support is available when we get home. But at the same time, for veterans, I don't want us to become a population that is reliant on somebody else to, I don't want us to become a reliant population. So I think the number one issue is making sure that that doesn't happen. But making sure the resources are available to the people that do need help and making it, I think in order to get those resources to people, helping people realize that they have them available to them, is kind of it's not easy. I don't think it's being done very well. So I don't think a lot of people really realize how to navigate the VA system to get their healthcare and make sure that if they're not getting something that they need, they know who to call and who to tell about it so they can get something changed. And then just making sure all the programs that are available to people and all the information and how to do it, how to go about it, how to apply for it. It's super complicated. And we need to make sure that we know how to get that done. But yeah, making sure people get what's due to them based on their sacrifice and the contract that they have with this country that they sign. You know, we as service members, we sign a contract saying, I will give you all of my rights for a certain time period. I will give you my life. I'll give you my limbs. And the government says, okay, what we give you we'll pay you, we'll house you, and we'll take care of you after the fact if you get injured during your time in service. And we need to make sure that the government is living up to that end of their bargain because, you know, we all know that we're living up to our end.
Right.
I think time will tell on, you know, how well the changes that have been made at the VA. I am excited about them. I think giving people more choice on where they can get their health care is a huge step in the right direction. But yeah, time's going to tell on how well that does. So I'm very excited about that. But yeah, it's about making sure people are getting the benefits that they deserve. And just making sure that veterans are still a population of people that are self-reliant.
All right.
Is number one. And part of that has to do with transition preparation when they're still in the military and right. Getting prepared for that. And so it's kind of an intangible thing what I'm talking about.
I also like what you're saying about self-reliance because yes, I mean, it's a bargain that we've lived up to through our service, but I think we also have to continue holding up our end of the bargain as we enter the civilian world, because if we're just going to sit back and not do anything, then, you know, I don't think that we want to be in a situation where we have to have people taking care of us all the time, because if things are going to change, if veteran suicide is not going to be an issue, if veteran homelessness is not going to be an issue, if we're going to drop that, it's one in four veterans entering the VA system has full blown diabetes. I mean, if we're going to end up lowering those numbers, it's got to be on us. We've got to take advantage of that, and we've got to fulfill our end of the bargain too. Much like you're doing right now, and continuing your service, and you know, being somebody who you know physically was in a lot worse of a situation compared to a lot of veterans. But you've continued working and you've continued pushing and you've never settled, or taken as fact that you're going to have to just fade off into the darkness. Right.
Yeah. I think that's, you know, one of the greatest examples of that is the GI Bill, where You get your education paid for because you made a sacrifice, but it's on you to make sure that education is worthwhile and it's in the right field. And then you use that education to continue to, you know, contribute to your country and make a great life for yourself. So those two things are, they're on, yeah, you're right. They're on us. They're on everybody. Right. They're on every person. But yeah, it's just a matter of making sure that from a federal perspective, making sure the government lives up to their end of the bargain, in an effective way. And then, you know, as new things kind of come up, like with the burn pit stuff, you know, giving people what they're due there as well, and making sure that as these new things start to come up, that we're not, you know, we're not leaving them in the lurch, after the service. And then, yeah, I mean, obviously veteran suicide is a terrible, I mean, it's awful, and it's becoming more and more prominent. And so we want to have an effect there. And I think that part of that is kind of back to what we talked about in the very, very beginning, optimism for the future and making sure that people are prepared for their separation, before they leave the service. And making sure that the help is available to them, that they need.
100%. 100%. Final question here. You mentioned Jocko. I know that you've got a great relationship with Jocko, and he's been a huge influence on you with his writings and his podcast. Yeah. Been a huge influence on me as well. What else are you reading? What books have you read in maybe the past month or since you started this process that have had an influence on you?
Yeah. So I've been reading General Mattis's book.
Yep. Great book.
I haven't finished it yet. But mostly the vast majority of the stuff that I'm reading right now is policy stuff. I've read 3 books on healthcare. And I read articles about these issues that I'm trying to learn about, and I'm researching things that I can do to fix traffic. Like, oh, how did this come to be? And how did this executive order change this? And that kind of thing. So yeah, it's just all mostly just policy stuff right now, and just trying to learn everything I can about all of these different issues. And then once I know a lot about it, then I can start to think creatively about how I can change it and how I can improve it. But the book that I'm reading right now that I read this morning is called The Price We Pay, and that's about healthcare. And it's okay. The healthcare system and all these different ways that it's that is being gamed by people. Mm-hmm. I'll give you an example of the chapter I'm reading this morning was about paramedic helicopters or transport helicopters, and how in the old days they used to be just owned by the hospital, and it was just a service that the hospital provided, and it would get paid for by insurance because it was owned by the hospital. It just get rolled into your bill. Except now it's been kind of privatized to the point where these companies are just charging exorbitant amounts for these helicopter rides, and the person doesn't know whether or not they need them. A lot of times they don't even have a choice. And so there's a guy in a story in the book I read this morning, a guy had a stomach ache, like a bad stomach ache, and he went to the hospital, got a series of tests. And they said, we're going to have to send you to the big city hospital. We're not sure what's going on. So they put him in a helicopter without telling him how much it's going to cost or anything. And they're just like, go to the helicopter and get transported. He gets transported to the big city, and they redo all the tests. And then they just say, there's nothing wrong with you. You just go home. And he says, well, how do I get home? Because I got flown here in a helicopter. So they say, well, you can use this phone to call your wife so you can get a taxi. So he has to call his wife to come and pick him up. A couple weeks later, he gets a bill for like $400,000.
Oh my God.
Because, yeah. And so that's just one example of the way that yeah, the incentives are all messed up with our healthcare system. And so, yeah, so I was reading about that this morning. And so that's a book I'm reading right now. And last month, yeah, General Mattis's book, was reading Dichotomy of Leadership. And that's kind of it right now.
General Mattis's book is phenomenal. And I think, you know, for somebody in your position who is going into new realms of leadership, I've had Bing West on the show, who was General Mattis's co-author, and we talked about the three levels of leadership he goes through in that book. And I think that book in particular, along with, you know, the other books you're reading, like Jocko's book, The Dichotomy of Leadership and Extreme Ownership, but those are books that are going to be relevant, you know, 100 years from now, 200 years from now, because of the base elements. You know, it's just they're speaking to human nature and accomplishing things that you know have really been around for thousands of years. You know,
yeah, this stuff doesn't change. I mean, just the fact that Jocko can go to, you know, a book by, you know, about Caesar, mm-hmm. and it still applies today, you know, just shows how timeless these things are. And so, yeah, those books are going to be around for a long time. They're going to be helping people for a long time.
Absolutely. Now, how can our audience help you out? Where can they go to donate? Where can they go to learn more about your campaign? And where can they go to follow your campaign?
Yeah, so to find out about the campaign, robjonesforcongress.com. My Twitter is robjonesva. My Instagram and Facebook are both robjonesforcongress. There's a few different ways you can help. The best way to help right now is to go on the website and make a donation. Like I said, we're trying to raise in the millions of dollars here. And so the best way that you can help me is to contribute whatever you can. It's $1, $5, $10, you know. I don't know how many listeners you get to each podcast, but if each one of them gave me $10 right now, then that'd be a huge amount of money, I'm sure. And so, you know, if you feel like having a veteran in Congress is going to be beneficial to our country and a Marine especially, then that's the way you can help to make it happen. And I know a lot of the people that listen to this podcast probably don't live in Northern Virginia, but these, you know, these positions, they have effects on everybody in the country because they are at the federal level. So even though I might not be representing a specific person on a day-to-day basis, I'm also there for America. So I will be representing, you know, kind of everybody in that way. And so that's the best way that people can help is to go do it. Set a notification on your phone as you listen to this, you know, donate to Rob Jones campaign 8 PM tonight so that you're just kind of sitting there doing, you know, whatever, in the evening time, you can do it really quick. It's really easy. And then if you do live in the area, you can sign up on the website to volunteer. We're going to need plenty of people volunteering to help us, you know, pass out information, go knock on doors for us, call people when the time comes. We might need people to sign up to be delegates in the convention. And then on top of that, if you donate or if you sign up to volunteer, you know, get in touch with 10 friends that you feel would be interested in hearing what I have to say and supporting me. And ask them directly to donate and go sign up. And so those are kind of the spreading the word or donating, spreading the word, signing up to volunteer, kind of be the three top ways.
Absolutely. And regardless of where you live in the United States, Congress affects us. It affects us actually more than who the president of the United States is. And it's important to understand that. And so if we can get people like Rob, people who are willing to learn and willing to listen, people who are willing to be pragmatic and to find solutions, and people who are used to serving rather than just taking from individuals. I think that's going to be important for all of us in this country. And so I definitely want to encourage you all to get over to those links. We'll get them up on the show notes as well. And we'll make it easy for you to get up there. So definitely, definitely head over there and do that. And, you know, Rob, I just want to acknowledge you, man. And one, I appreciate you coming on, but above all, I appreciate the fact that you're continuing to serve. You didn't just fall back by the wayside. You didn't just say, oh, this happened to me or that happened to me. You really want to help people. And I can see that. And, you know, I think that's amazing. And we definitely need more people like you in Congress.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, man. You're exactly right. All I want to do is just be of service to people. You know, I don't have any greater aspirations than that. You know, I'm not trying to be president. I'm not trying to be the governor of Virginia. I'm not trying to be a senator. I just want to be a representative. That's it. And I kind of attribute it to, it's a bit like being, it's kind of similar to being a platoon commander. You know, you as a platoon commander, you are there with the troops. You're a leader amongst the troops, but you know each person individually. You have a relationship with them, and that's what I want. And then, you know, as you go higher and higher, you start to lose that relationship. It's General Mattis talks about this in his book. You start to lose the relationship, the individual relationship with people, and I don't want to lose that. I was happy when I was in the Marine Corps just being a team leader as an enlisted guy, and that's – yeah, that's the role that I feel the best, that I can help the best in. So that's what I want to do. I just want to help people.
Outstanding. Outstanding. Well, again, Rob, thank you so much for coming on. And to everybody out there, make sure you get over to those links to donate to the campaign. Like I said, our Congress has an effect on everything we do, you know, ranging from your personal freedoms to, you know, how long it's going to take you to get to work to everything. And, you know, we need to be involved in this and we need to be shaping it. And I think everybody needs to understand that. So with that, guys, I want to thank you all for listening to this. And I want you to all get out there and live your best lives while you can. We'll be back at you next week with some more awesome material.
All right, guys, I really hope that you enjoyed that interview with Mr. Rob Jones. He is an absolutely inspiring individual. You need to go check him out. You need to check out his campaign, but you also need to check out his story. It is so inspiring to see how he's overcome every single obstacle that's been put in front of him. You know what? That's what we need to be doing too. We need to start seeing our obstacles as opportunities. And that's what the Warrior Soul podcast is about. And that is what the Warriors Obituary Society is about. What is the Warriors Obituary Society? This is a group that empowers men to live absolutely epic lives, lives worthy of epic obituaries. We get together each week and we push each other toward our most important goals. And with this group, what's really important here is having a community around you, a community of like-minded individuals who are trying to push you to be your very best. When new members come into the group, they go through an 8-week development program. And in that 8-week development program, you're outlining your vision, you're outlining your goals, you're getting very clear about what you want. And then we're working on specifics. We're working on your fitness, we're working on your personal finance, we're working on your careers and business, we're working on your networking skills. And after the development program is over, that's when the work really begins. Each month, we're getting assignments, we're working on new goals, and you're being held accountable by the group. We get together each week for a live call, and we also talk every single day over our private forum on Slack. We don't do anything over social media because I don't want anybody looking over our shoulders, and I don't want your attention to get fractured because you go on Facebook groups and things like that, there's a million alerts, a million messages, things like that. And it really just doesn't help you with going after your goals. So if this is something that you think you'd be interested in, if this is something that you want to take part in, let me know. You can email me over at chris@warriorsoulagogi.com. We can sit down for a call. We can see if you're right for the group and if the group is right for you. And with that, guys, Again, I hope you got a lot out of this episode. If you did, please head over to iTunes, write us a written rating or review, share the episode out, spread the word about what we're doing here at Warrior Soul. Take care, guys. Get out there and live your best lives while you can.